This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Here we go. It's hour number 5 of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a good one. Storms coming in, aren't they? I see a strong possibility of some tornadic activity in central and western Oklahoma this evening. I saw Dennehy, the FBI director, dude, is stepping down after accusations that the FBI helped hide some of those Epstein files. So, man, it's just insane. And we have sports news everywhere. So a very eventful evening here, once again, in the G-Bag Nation with stuff to talk about. Of course, we are your home of the Rangers, and Wolchuk has a proper round tripper. Here he is.
All right, we'll get to a clubhouse uncomfortable conversation with one Matt Hicks here in just a moment. We are working on Luke Jackson, which will be the final one that we recorded last week while we were out there in surprise. Luke Jackson's conversation, though, was like darn near 16 minutes. So we're just working on getting that thing edited down. But he was fantastic. Very, very insightful. Rangers did fall today 6-3 to the Royals. But some observations per our buddy Sean McFarland, who was there. You did have the unofficial debut of lefty Robert Garcia, who was part of Monday's B game after he had forearm irritation to start camp. So he's 28 years old. He pitched a scoreless inning in relief of Nathan Eovaldi. In the Rangers' B game, he said he felt great, attacked the zone, made pitch adjustments, everything he was trying to work on this offseason. He said he got it done there, so he felt really, really good. He's ready to roll, so hopefully we get to see him in normal game action soon. And then Evan Carter, we talk about him hitting lefties, and, well, he did it today, opposite field single against Kansas City lefty Angel Zerpa in the game in the B field as well. So he was 0-for-4 against lefties entering play, got his first single today. So he's got to feel good about that, said Bruce Bochy. Hopefully that's a sign of things to come there for Evan Carter. And the final observation is our buddy Jake Berger, who's just been smacking the hell out of the ball left and right there in surprise. But defensively, he showcased some range, made an over-the-shoulder catch, running into deep foul territory. Back-to-back days now, he's done that. He hasn't made a single error in 5 starts, and the bat's been phenomenal. He's slashing .375 with 2 homers in 7 games. He had a 113.2-mile-per-hour single in the second inning of the game today. So he just continues to just absolutely crater the baseball. As Jake Berger, I mean, he's after the interview that we got to have with him on Friday before we left, I mean, I don't know how all Ranger fans can't just fall in love with this dude. He's just an absolutely great player, but also going to add some much-needed power to this lineup.
Oh, yeah, dude. He is the man. I feel like this lineup does hold up against anybody else, at least on paper. Could be the best lineup in all baseball, Wolchuk.
Yeah, it might be.
And the glove was actually a little bit more impressive than I was anticipating as well. So that was awesome.
I wasn't sure what you'd get from him defensively.
A lot of Tolos are texting in saying like he should just be the Rangers player show every week.
I'd love that.
It's a long season, though, you know?
It is a long season. Maybe you run out of things to talk about, but Berger was phenomenal. I mean, I could talk with him certainly. The more the merrier during the course of the season. Hopefully we get many more visits with one Jake Berger. Now, I saw this today from Bleacher Report. I thought it was kind of fun. They had every major league team's all-quarter century lineup. So what would be the best offensive lineup for the Rangers since 2000? So we're going, you know, last 25 years here. And it's interesting because this year's lineup, I do think, has a chance to be one of the best. Obviously, 2 years ago, you win a World Series. They were one of the best offenses in all of Major League Baseball. And then the units they went to back-to-back World Series with in 2010 and 2011, also just a special lineup. So you look at who they're throwing out there. DH, Michael Young. Shortstop, Alex Rodriguez. Center field, Josh Hamilton. Third base, Adrian Beltre, the Hall of Famer. First base, Tex, Mark Teixeira. Your catcher is Pudge Rodriguez. Second base is Ian Kinsler. Right field, Nelly Cruz. And left field is one Adolis Garcia. Now, here is their take. It was difficult to figure out where to slot Michael Young in this positional article, and he ended up snubbed across all four infield spots, but that was rectified by his inclusion as the designated hitter. I mean, they could have put him at center at second base instead of Ian Kinsler, maybe.
What, did you mention Seager?
No Seager because of A-Rod.
I mean, he should be the DH then.
Yeah, you could have him as the DH.
Yeah, we're finding a place for Seager here, aren't we, Wolchuk?
We're finding a place.
I would.
We'll add a 10th man into the lineup if we have to. We'll change the sport in its entirety.
I mean, I would probably be fine with putting Michael Young at second base over Ian, and then you can just slide Seegs in at DH. I mean, he is your damn World Series MVP, which nobody else can say in the history of the Texas Rangers organization. But A-Rod at shortstop, I mean, as much as I can't really stand Alex Rodriguez, the talent is undeniable.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a 50-home-run guy, played great defense, hit for average. He was the full-on, you know, total package for his time. I thought you were going with what season would have your best overall Texas Rangers offense.
Yeah, and I think that would be a fun exercise. 877-881-1053. I mean, 2023 obviously has a soft spot, but I do think those teams in specifically 2011 when they add Adrian Beltre and you've got Josh Hamilton, I think I might take that as the best Rangers offensive lineup.
Yeah, that was great, and 2010 was something with Vlad Guerrero still.
Yeah, Vladdy was still humming.
In the mix, but I think for my money, I'm going to go back to 99 with the Juan Palmeiro Pudge, 3-4-5. I mean, so many of the guys on that team might not have had huge names, but they were all hitting 290 and above.
Yeah, the power in that lineup. And like what happened to Juan Gonzalez from the 817, it's not all time. It's just since 2000. So you did have like Juan, of course, in those 90s teams was crushing it, but he wasn't on this club. I mean, and they did put Dolly on here in left field, and what Dolly did in 2023, that's tough to argue with, but they left Nelson Cruz there in right, and I wondered if that would bother you.
Doesn't bother me. I think that's statistically accurate. You know, the show that Nelly put on post 30, I hope Dolly has some sort of a run over the next 6 to 7 years.
We really, really do.
Like Nelly did. You know, it's never going to escape me how he let you down, you know, and he let Ron Washington down.
He did. Now, Rob Manfred today is considering a petition to reinstate Pete Rose. All right. He was placed on the permanently ineligible list in 89 because of gambling. We know that. And the shame of this is we lost Pete Rose in September. But now you've got Manfred who's reviewing a petition by the family of the late Pete Rose to reinstate the all-time hits leader. If he's reinstated, he would then become eligible for election into the Hall of Fame, which I think would be a no-brainer. But then again, you never know with those crusty baseball writers. But I think this is long overdue. And the shame for me is that this wasn't done when Pete Rose was alive.
I'd leave him out, Wolchuk. I think because you didn't put him in when he's alive, I understand.
Why now?
Yeah. You know, you have the opportunity here to make a statement without really hurting anybody that's alive other than his family.
Right? Yeah. And it is his family, I guess, that's really the driving force here. But, hey, Don Van Natta, who, of course, was in right there in the middle of all of this, had a piece. L.A. lawyers represented Rose prior to his death at age 83 in late September, said he filed the reinstatement petition after he and Fawn Rose, the oldest daughter of Pete, met with Manfred, spoke with MLB and their spokesman, Pat Corney, in the commissioner's office. This is back on December 17th. So I guess they've been trying to get this going for a while. But I don't know. I don't know if this is going to work out here for Pete. And thing is, It's long overdue. I think that this is probably 10 years too late here for what Rob Manfred's trying to accomplish.
Okay, speaking of long overdue, Wolchuk, we do want to get Jared Sandler in here, brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration, one-day hair loss solution, advancedhair.com. And Sands joins us now here in the G-Bag Nation. And a good evening, Jared. How the heck are you?
I'm great, fellas. How are y'all?
We're doing wonderful, man. Tell us what we missed today. Anything eventful happened in this? I mean, they made it interesting a little bit late. How close did it get?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they got the tying run of the plate, but and I don't mean this disrespectfully, but it wasn't like the Rangers played a high quality game in the second half of the game. There were, defensive miscues, and it was one of those games where it's like, oh wait, they have the tying run at the plate. It just didn't really have that feel like, it was a grinding game, which they were competing from finish. But while they're
we're losing you, Sants. What happened there? Did you change something or another? We lost you? Yeah. Okay. Bye, Jared. Have a good one. He's at Jared Sandler on Twitter.
Hell of a report.
That got weird.
Advanced Hair Restoration, Dallas and Fort Worth. Simple one-day hair loss solution. AdvancedHair.com. That's what that is.
He's still talking, too, by the way.
Still talking. I believe it.
That did get weird, right?
Yeah. Long-winded.
I don't know. Yeah, it was some weird audio.
It's an AirPod situation. Maybe you get in the car, all of a sudden it's trying to hook up to the Bluetooth in the car.
Still talking, bro.
Can you hear me?
Oh, my God.
That's a hell of a report.
That's incredible.
We are missing out on some gold right now. Albert Pujols has been named the Dominican Republic manager for the 2026 World Baseball Classic. Future first ballot Hall of Famer, did play for the Dominican team back in 06 in the World Baseball Classic. Just 45 years old. Maybe this is the start for him becoming a skipper in the future in Major League Baseball. She's going to do that for the Dominican Republic. But without further ado, let's go ahead and catch up with our buddy Matt Hicks. This was our conversation in the clubhouse with the one and only Hicks.
Yeah, and I just want to put, Jared was saying, like, hey, Matt gets really long-winded. Why don't you put, like, a time cap on each
which we should not
responses.
Have told him about. This was an error. We kind of told him beforehand, like, hey, this is a 45-second buzzer. We probably should just let him go and then just buzzed him.
Yeah.
All right, we're continuing our uncomfortable conversations. 45 seconds or less game here with, you got the hard cutoff with Matt Hicks, our good buddy Hicksy, with the voice of an angel, some say.
Hicksy. Like Fergie and Jesus, actually.
It really is. Yeah. Well, what'd you have for breakfast this morning?
I had a banana and orange juice.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just one banana?
One banana. Yeah, my cardiologist recommended that I have a banana a day, and so that's what I do in the morning.
Okay, all right. And was that fresh squeezed OJ, or was that some Simply Orange fake stuff?
Wow, you were right on it. It was the Simply Orange stuff. I often get coupons for that, and that's why I go Simply Orange.
Where do you find your coupons?
You're a couponer.
I'm a couponer, but not a big one. But yeah, I usually get it from Kroger or Fry's, and I get the coupons from those guys.
I love that. So you're the guy that's holding up everybody else in line because you're sifting through your coupons.
Five or six coupons every time I go.
It's all about, this is Hicksy's time to shine.
We're saving some money.
That's what it's about, dude. You didn't save any money on those Skechers, though. Those things look damn good.
That's all I wear now, Skechers. Greatest shoes ever.
What makes the Skechers the greatest shoe?
You're so Tony Romo guy.
So comfortable. It doesn't matter whether it's the slip-ins or whether these tie. It doesn't matter. They're just so incredibly comfortable, and I can't believe it's taken this long in my life to discover these things.
And so it was this off-season? That was your big off-season?
No, I've probably worn Skechers now for the last 3 or 4 years.
How many pairs you got?
Five.
Really?
Five?
Yeah.
Do you look for specific colors to match the wardrobe?
No. You can ask Jared Sandler. I do not coordinate any of my wardrobe.
Jared, does he coordinate any of his wardrobe?
Most unfashionable person I've ever met.
That's enough. Thanks, Jared. What about I have always wondered, boxers or briefs?
Boxer briefs.
Boxer briefs.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
For the package.
No question.
Yeah.
Tommy John's.
Tommy John's.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, TJ's.
You ever wear Tommy John's?
Never have. They're a little too expensive for me.
You need to get yourself a pair.
Where is the most comfortable place to place the waistline on your pants? Where on your body? Do you like to go as up to the breastplate?
Or no,
just
no,
right
no.
above the belly button?
I feel like this is a targeted question. The waistline is just below the belly button.
Okay.
And right on the hip.
All right.
Yep.
If you could trade bodies with any Texas Rangers player, who would it be?
Wow. Yes. Adolis Garcia.
Is it the guns? Is it the
it's the overall package. Yeah, no question.
Unbelievable. Have you ever seen a guy the size of Sebastian Walcott get it done at shortstop?
Well, Corey Seager would fit the bill there, but Sebastian Walcott has got what looks to be like a lot of tools, and is a guy I think is going to be successful in baseball for a long time.
Who on this Rangers team do you feel like has the most dog in them?
Right now, Alejandro Osuna.
How many dong balls is Matt Hicks going to hit this year?
None.
None. You're going to put a bagel in the dong column?
I think so.
Why are you leaking confidence in the dong, Sixie?
Hey, you nailed it, though. 45 seconds or less. You crushed.
I couldn't get a single one that you were even close to.
We didn't buzz you on any one of those.
This is really disappointing.
See, I thought the whole bit was 45 seconds. I thought Walchuk can't tell time.
We've taken too much of your
time.
You're
waiting for me. Man, it's too long, Hicksy.
Matt Hicks, you swing a big stick. We love you.
And thank you.
Can't wait to hear you all season long on 105.3 The Fan.
Appreciate it.
Screw you, Jared.
Yeah, great stuff there, Matt Hicks and the Nosebleed Boys in the Rangers clubhouse. By the way, you mentioned Wolcott hit a ground ball to shortstop, bottom of the seventh yesterday, with an exit velo of 115.1. Rangers had just one batted ball hit harder all last year. Adolis Garcia went 116.1 in May against the Athletics, so he is, as Wolchuk said there, just pulverizing the baseball.
He really is. Now, the thing about Hicksy there is the conversation went on for about another 30 minutes as he described this Tommy John underwear. In fact, when I went into the booth the following day to say goodbye to him, he actually pulled down his pants to show me the undies.
You didn't tell me that.
Yeah, it was a private moment. I felt that I'd just keep it between the three of us.
I'm glad you did.
Let's get a little bit more of Jared in here. Again, brought to you by Advanced Hair. And Jared, are you back with us and topside of the body of water that you plunged into in the middle of that last answer?
Yeah, I don't know what happened, guys. I'm really sorry. I decided to go for a swim in the middle of the answer, I guess.
All good. So we've had a first round of cuts already. Any surprises there?
No. I mean, usually the first round for any team is just taking some of the guys who you invited to big league camp as a salute to the work that they've done, the younger guys, and you get them over to the minor league side once minor league camps.
In part because now your starters, your main guys, starting to get more – more innings under their belt in a given game. There's just not as much playing time to go around. And so I think that's really the impetus. Nothing surprising yet heck, the Rangers had 72 guys in camp. I think that might be the most of any team in Major League Baseball. So they needed to do this just to kind of clear the room for some guys.
Wolchuk was just asking, where does this lineup, you know, rank as far as greatest Rangers lineups? And we were talking about the 2010 and 2011 and the 99. Could this lineup, you know, play out to be in the conversation?
Yeah, it's interesting. I absolutely think so. On the other hand, you know, some of these projection models have the Rangers kind of middle of the pack offensively. And I think a part of it is that there's a chance that this lineup, if things don't, fall properly, this lineup is a very aggressive swing and miss lineup that doesn't really work the count much. They've got a lot of aggressive hitters, but I think that's why a guy like Evan Carter is really important. Even if he hits ninth all year, just having another guy in the lineup who can work the count, who can draw walks, who has patience, I think there's a lot of value there. But, yeah, I mean, I think ultimately some of those projection models are a little off. I think this is a top third offense and maybe even a top five offense. But, you know, if you want to play both sides and be fair, if you play the whole hypothetical, you know, what would go wrong if the Rangers weren't a top five offense? I think that's what it is, that you just get a lot of swing and miss and you don't get a bounce back from Adolis Garcia. You really need a bounce back from Adolis Garcia if they're going to, you know, enter a conversation comparing themselves to some of the other really good lineups in franchise history.
Matt Hicks just told Zach and Eric that Alejandro Osuna is the guy with the most dog in him. I think at spring training, this guy's a lot of fun to watch. He's just so massive. How much does he weigh? It's got to be like 250 pounds, right? It's like an NFL fullback who runs super fast, playing baseball as fast as he possibly can. How would you describe him?
Yeah, no, I mean, he is kind of like a little bowling ball. I mean, he's not very tall. He's barely taller than I am. But he's super thick, and I would not want to get into any kind of a fight. I mean, he looks like he'd be a wrestler, like low man. You know, low man wins. Like, I wouldn't want to get on the mat with him. And, you know, he's one of those guys who, no, he's not a big-time prospect. He did have a good year last year and started to get some notoriety because of it. But,
he is more of a guy who just, he competes his ass off, and he's really good defensively. He's got a good arm. He's great, you know, in the corner spots with great range, and he puts together competitive at bats. I mean, he's, you know, he's been facing some big league pitching, and you know, he, sometimes these young guys, and you don't fault them for it. The first time they face big league pitching in spring training, you know, they just kind of look a little lost, and you know, they're drinking from a fire hose, and he looks like he belongs. You know, he's not going to break camp with his team, but I would not be surprised if by the middle of the year, if a guy gets hurt and there's a need or they want to spark, if Alejandro Ozuna is healthy, that you see Alejandro Ozuna at the big league level. And I think that, you know, if what we've seen so far is any indication, he definitely is going to be in conversation for big league playing time, you know, in subsequent seasons.
So Mark Church went out and struck out the side today in his inning of work. Was that just all jobbers he was sitting down?
Yeah, I mean, it was minor league pitch or minor league hitters, you know, no one of big league quality, but that doesn't change the fact that the command and the velocity was really impressive. You know, it's one thing if he's striking guys out by, you know, hanging a breaking ball and they're just not equipped to take advantage of it because they're just not at that level. But I mean, he was placing his pitches where he wanted to, and it was really sharp and really impressive. He's got a unique release point. You know, he's more over the top, and so it makes that curveball, that power, that power slider have a lot more vertical drop to it. Makes it tough to hit. I really believe that both Mark Church and Emiliano Teodo are going to be pitching critical innings for this team out of the bullpen this year, even if it's not right off the bat on opening day.
Jared, can you share some details with us on what the DeGrom plan seems to be moving forward?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's going to start, and this might have been when I got underwater earlier, and I apologize, but I think he's going to make a start, you know, within the first five games of the season. I think it's, you know, they indicated today probably, you know, game 3, 4, 5. He's more just on schedule for that being a launch date, and there's nothing wrong with that. Outside of the notch on the belt being an opening day starter, it really doesn't matter whether you're second, third, fourth, or fifth. I mean, it's not like you're locked into that for the rest of the season. And I just think in general they're going to be conservative with him, especially early on. I think, you know, if there's an opportunity to get him an extra day with an off day, they will. If he goes 5 innings and strikes out 10 and allows one hit, don't be surprised if early on the Rangers pull him if he's at 75 pitches, just because there's no reason to overextend him. I think the goal is not to have Jacob DeGrom through April. I think the goal is to have Jacob DeGrom through as deep into the season as you go, and that might mean October. And so, you know, remember, the Rangers won a World Series largely without Jacob DeGrom. And so, you know, you can obviously have success without him, but I think it'd be awfully nice to have him. And if that means you only have him for 4 or 5 innings for the first month or so, then that's what that means. And I think eventually they'll get him up to where he can go 6 and then 7. But, you know, I imagine they'd like to get him around 140, 150 innings if he stays healthy. And there might be a stretch in the season where they sit him for a couple weeks just to give him a rest, because it's his second Tommy John. There's not a lot of guys who have a track record of success post-second Tommy John. As a matter of fact, the guy who probably has the most skins on the wall post the second Tommy John is Nathan Eovaldi. But there just aren't a lot of guys like that, and I think the Rangers are going to be conservative with him because their goal is that every fifth or sixth day he's pitching, whether that's 6, 7 innings, I don't think they care. As long as he's on the mound, I think they feel like they're going to have a good chance to win that game.
Cy Young, you heard it here first, Jared. Thank you so much. It's a notch on our belt whenever you can join us.
I'm sorry about the problems earlier, fellas.
No, it's all good, buddy. There he goes. He's at Jared Sandler on Twitter. We have a sports hodgepodge coming up next. Chief, where are you taking us?
Travis Hunter versus Shohei Ohtani, and we award the best take of the day next in the nation.
Yeah, welcome back, Nation. Segment is brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. Franklin Frankel, there's never an out-of-pocket cost. Only get paid when you win. Franklin Frankel, go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Here he is, Eric Chiafalo, with your evening sports hodgepodge.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. We will award the take of the day here momentarily, 877-881-1053. We have a Travis Hunter versus Shohei Ohtani conversation that is taking over because of the media availability with Travis Hunter during the combine, saying that he thinks that what he does on a football field, being a two-way player full-time, is harder than what Ohtani does in baseball when he's healthy enough to hit and pitch. So that took off the conversation of what is actually more impressive, what is more difficult, being a full-time receiver and corner at the highest level or being a starting pitcher slash home run monster beast.
Wow, it's a fascinating conversation. I could take it so many different ways. I mean, in order to be an elite cornerback and wide receiver, you have to have this incredible hand-eye coordination, incredible reflexes, the speed, the power. It's all got to be there. But baseball is such a fine skill, you know, that I can't. I mean, you're one of the best pitchers and one of the best hitters. You're throwing it 99 miles an hour and missing the greatest bats in the sport, and you're somehow able to connect with the top pitches. I'm gonna cop out here and say it's a tie, Giafalo.
Well, I just it feels like it's two completely different skill sets to be able to pitch and hit at that level. Yeah. And not that it's apples to apples, like copy and paste skill set, but it's a similar skill set, being a wide receiver and being a great corner. You know, there obviously there's differences in the position, but it's very similar in terms of the skill, athleticism that you're using at both positions. Whereas just because you're a great hitter does not mean in any world that you can actually pitch. And just because you can pitch doesn't mean in any way that you could actually be a great hitter.
Yeah.
So I just think it's like Ohtani is, it's two completely different skill sets that he's the one, you know, the best in the world at when it comes to pitching and hitting. You could have, you could probably have NFL wide receivers right now, if they just committed to being a corner, they'd be a pretty good corner, and vice versa with corners being a wide receiver. How many pitchers could just be like, yeah, I can go hit a bunch of dongs? Or how many dong hitters can go, yeah, no, I can go be an ace starting pitcher for a team? Like, to me, having what Ohtani's able to do as a hitter and a pitcher is just completely amazing, because they're two completely different skill sets, it feels like.
I agree with that. You know, I think it could also be said there's a lot of different skill sets that go along with playing the different football spots, like tackling and catching and covering.
No doubt.
But I think the drastic nature of pitching compared to hitting, I think you definitely have a point there. I would say, though, in the course of becoming a great hitter, you're always throwing the ball, you know? So I'm developing those at the same time. Usually in the world of football, you're kind of focusing on one for the majority of the time after, let's say, age 17 or 18. But in this specific situation, Travis Hunter has been playing both his entire life.
Yeah. I mean, there's certainly the endurance factor.
Yes.
You know, like that type of deal that Hunter's able to do, being a full-time receiver and corner, that takes a very, very special person to,
like, what is the most difficult to do physically? Like, it's Travis Hunter playing for 3.5 hours on both sides of the football.
Yeah, it's never been done. If he actually did this in the NFL, which he hasn't, so, like, I think he's got to do that for this to really be a conversation, since we've seen Shohei do this in Major League Baseball. Like, if Travis Hunter actually did full-time corner receiver, I think that'd be more impressive. Nobody else has ever done it. You can look at, go back to Babe Ruth, and there have been a select few players that have done this in Major League Baseball because of the stamina aspect of it, the physicality in which it is compared from football to baseball. But I just don't see it happening for him full-time at both, which is why, like what Shohei's done, I don't see it ever being replicated in any sport.
So you're saying if Hunter ends up being the one-of-one dude who could be a full-time two-way player, then you would give him the nod for that? Yeah.
I mean, you got to do it, and you got to be great.
Yeah,
you know? Exactly. Yeah,
he's got to be like all pro, basically, of both.
Yeah. Like, there's a ton of guys who could hit you 30 bombs and start 25 games in baseball. They would give up an 8 ERA.
Sure, exactly.
But like the texter just pointed out, Mitch Moreland throws 97. You know, I think in baseball, it's more of the teams won't let you because they're trying to preserve or perfect one side of the other.
And that is certainly a fair argument. I'm sure there are probably more guys than we could imagine if they were actually putting the time and effort and being coached to do both, that could be at least decent at one and great at the other, whatever. But Ohtani is the only one, like, being as dominant as he is at both. Pretty spectacular. But yeah, I mean, 817, hitting a baseball is the hardest thing in sports. Where else is achieving your goal 30% of the time a great thing? Fair.
But they grade it on a curve. Like, if you're successful 27% of the time in baseball, you're going to be an all-star. If you do that for 10, 15 years and hit a bunch of home runs, you could be a Hall of Famer hitting 270, right? So they grade that on a curve. In football, you got to shut down your wide receiver over the course of 60 plays. You got to shut him down 57 or 58 times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so you have an error rate that is below 10% to still be good.
You have the, let's see, the 817, Travis Hunter's own coach, Deion Sanders, said that hitting a baseball is the hardest thing to do in sports. Ohtani does that at the highest level and is a great pitcher. 940 football is far more impressive due to the physicality of the sport.
Yeah.
So all of that I totally get. And there were some good quotes from Jory Epstein's article from the Combine about the way some of these executives view Travis Hunter. So I'll get to that here in a second. But this is Chad Ochocinco with what I believe to be the best sports take of the day.
The two most difficult things in life are hitting the baseball and keeping a woman happy long term. The two most difficult things in life. You hear me?
So I believe he was making the argument for Ohtani being the more impressive one, talking about the hitting of the baseball, and then he just threw in the other thing. If you're just going all the difficult things in life, hitting a baseball, keeping a woman happy.
Yeah.
He really hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I feel like I've gotten better at keeping a woman happy the older that I get, but she might just be better at putting up with my stuff.
Two-way street for sure.
Hiding her displeasure.
It's got to be a little give and take there.
Yeah, you know, I think there's got to be some sort of a formal studying of the woman that mankind does. And when I say mankind, I'm speaking of just men, right? We got to get together and workshop this because they got a lot of tricks, you know? They got a lot of ways to keep you on your toes. They're usually just testing you, right? So they're actively like sort of spreading out like booby traps across your relationship just to see how you react to it for fun. They're bored, you know?
Yeah.
So we need to get a better understanding of this and then come up with a toolkit on how to fight back, because up until this point, you know, I think we've just kind of punted on it and said, whatever, you know? Be quiet, woman, you know? It wasn't until recently where we were like, hey, you know, we're going to try to actually interact with them on a one-on-one fair level, right? And evolutionally, I think I just made up a word, we got like tens and tens of thousands of years, like just discounting them, right? They've been laying back studying us,
yeah,
figuring out how to get their way while letting us be idiots, you know?
Yes.
And now, like, we're trying to play catch up in this psychological warfare that we have just never considered for generations.
Boom.
You know what I'm saying?
You just went Ohtani bat to ball on this one.
Yeah, I mean, we figured out in like 5 years how to split an atom and drop bombs, right? Oppenheimer was like, let's go, guys. We got a team. New Mexico. Give us 5 years to study this thing and see if we can get caught up a little bit. Because right now we're losing bad.
A half decade of a meeting of the minds.
No,
you know,
we don't.
All of our brain power
together.
They've
been studying us.
Yeah.
We didn't study them.
No.
The execs that study the football players had some things to say about Travis Hunter. This is from Jory Epstein in Yahoo Sports. She says some talent evaluators believe that in order to justify Hunter's high draft slot, he needs to play at least some role on both sides of the ball, given his generational status stems from his versatility rather than his pure projection at one position. Even though I do think, like, you watch him at receiver right now, you like him quite a bit. How much better could he have been at receiver at Colorado if he was just solely focused on that? Same with the cornerback spot. You know, like, you might be getting, do you want a B receiver and a B corner?
No.
And you're getting both of those? Or do you just want an A-plus one side of the ball guy? Because I think that's sort of a
do you
thing
have to choose one
on the table. Like, there's a chance that it plays out that way. Like, hey, he's not going to be the best version of himself when he's splitting time doing. He could be passable, solid corner, solid receiver, or you can just make him full time at one of them, and he becomes the best at his position. Maybe.
Yeah, you know, I guess you have to acknowledge and respect the amount of hard work that it takes, and maybe there's just not enough hours in the day to be amazing. I mean, Deion was incredible, but he was still just a decent wide receiver.
Yeah, because again, this is Travis Hunter saying, like, I want to be 100% on both sides of the ball. I am full time on both sides.
Well, so I'm gonna let him try it. You know, we used to not see players come out of college and have impactful years as a rookie wide receiver or corner. I mean, but if you can come out in your rookie year and do both of those at a really high level, I'm going to let it go until I get that kind of feedback, and then we're going to have to specialize in one. But I don't want to put anything past him. He'd be the best corner in the draft, Wolchuk.
I think he's the best corner in the draft, and he's my second best receiver in the draft.
Behind McMillan.
So I think that he's absolutely capable of doing it and doing both at an elite level. It's so taxing and physically demanding on the body, which is why I would just play him at corner, and then I'm going to have certain packages for him as a wide receiver. I just think that's the route I would go. But I do believe teams aren't maximizing his potential if they don't play him both ways.
I mean, how much more taxing and punishing is it than college at that position? You're out in space. You're fighting with guys basically your size. You're not getting rocked by multiple 240-pound dudes.
Everybody's big, fast, and strong in the NFL. I mean, he's going up against some guys that are going to be accountants and lawyers and business analysts. Not all those dudes are, you know, the cream of the crop. I mean, you're going up against the best athletes in the world every single down. Whereas, you know, if he's playing against Colorado State here and there, not to take shots at them, just an example, maybe you're going up against a guy that knows I'm not playing football at a higher level than this right now.
Overwhelmingly, though, she says evaluators who spoke to Yahoo Sports do not believe he could be a full-time two-way player due to the game planning and film study demands of the pro level, especially at receiver. So kind of what you were saying there. One guy said, quote, if he plays one, I want him to play receiver. If he plays both, he has to play corner because you can't play receiver and have a package on defense, but you can play defense and have a package on offense, kind of like what Wolchuk was saying there. Certainly an easier thing to do. But he says, so if you intend to utilize him to the fullest extent, he's either going to be your number one receiver or he's going to be your corner that has packages. But now I think the argument, too, can be made that he's not a number one receiver. He's a number two receiver. Mm-hmm. A second AFC talent evaluator believed Hunter should be trained full-time at corner and part-time at receiver, initially given the offensive responsibility level of a number four wide receiver with limited snaps. The evaluator envisioned graduating Hunter into a more advanced offensive role and opportunities if he mastered the initial ask atop his defensive responsibilities.
I mean, there's plenty of guys in the NFL that are like, hey, he's not the best route runner. He doesn't understand the zone. We're just trying to get him the ball.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd kind of like making him your Kevontae Turpin or whatever on offense, at least maybe a little bit more involvement. Seems like it should be easy enough.
Yeah, I agree. I just it's such a fascinating conversation and the way this is going to play out, which team gets him, what their plan is for him, how they acclimate him to the 100% on both sides, if that's the case. I don't know, but this is going
to
be a lot of fun.
His IQ, like his ability to process, like the dude was a 4.0 major, like GPA. Yeah. Like the dude
and
is
the character,
crazy
like,
smart.
He's
just an
incredible dude.
If anyone can do it, he'd be the guy.
All righty. Well, we'll see what Fred and Blake can do coming up next. We'll have a crosstalk here with the Fan After Dark. Yes, sir. Thank you. It's the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Time now to get you set for the Fan After Dark. Fred's in here cutting up.
Yeah, we are.
He's been on a roll since he walked in shortly after that last break started. You guys have a good weekend?
Had a fantastic week. Just fighting to keep the city streets of Dallas safe.
Oh, there you go.
Which is what we did over the weekend. We'll talk about it. Did a ride-along yesterday. Shout out to all my Dallas police officers out there. It is a thankless job, and God bless them all.
Right on. Well, I have a law enforcement background as well. I went on a ride-along with my brother about 15 years ago.
There you go.
It was a wild night.
Not for the faint of heart.
It was, dude.
God,
it was.
Did you see some stuff? Almost said something bad.
I mean, just more embarrassing stuff
for the
people involved. Like, dude, you got crashed out like this?
You let yourself get that?
You got in a fight in the 7-Eleven parking lot?
Seriously.
Like, you know?
Gosh, be better.
You just never know what people are going through, though.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Did they ever, like, hit the gas really fast and you're going,
we flipped the lights on three different times.
Yeah.
Oh, no, we flipped the lights on three times. Oh, my cousin, he's you can tell we're related.
I don't think I'd ever get over that. Like, I'm looking for any excuse to do 125 here.
Let me tell you something. I'm telling you what. Like I said, he flipped the lights on three different times. Because I've done a couple other ride-alongs back in the day, and it wasn't near as exciting as it was. Plus, we're in South Central Dallas, right? A little bit different. A little bit different area, so to speak. So, no, it was a good time.
Will you miss Jimmy Johnson on television?
No. I mean, what did he ever say that we ever thought and said, I never thought it like that.
I liked his critiques of the Cowboys. You know,
from that standpoint, I can appreciate
it. Just it always felt like we have a real credible voice that can, you know, spell it out like it is.
Tim Shout and Troy out to Port Arthur, though.
The hair, the Absolutely. Tan, you know, like he, I mean, he aged well. He didn't wait till the very end.
Oh,
like, I
think
he probably had another 5 years in him of like being pretty impressive before he got into like the Lee Corso territory of, oh, no.
Why are we still moving him out there, by the way?
Just must be, must get good scores. I mean, your college football audience is up there.
Yeah.
You know,
that's
might be
true.
Speaking to his peers.
Fair point.
What do you guys have coming up on the show today?
Loaded show tonight.
Loaded.
Rashad McCants is going to join us, talk a little NBA.
Wait, stop right there. That's a big-time guest.
That's
Does
a
everybody
good
know who Rashad McCants is?
I see him in the Gilbert Arenas thing all the time.
2005 North Carolina champion.
That's exactly
right. I rode him. My bracket was a winner thanks to that guy.
You did what?
What'd you say? I stopped, Fred.
He was going to share something.
I thought I heard something.
Victory.
Right along.
Personal.
Throw the Tar Heels to victory.
That's right. That's the only thing he's riding. Rashad McCants at 720. And then Lance Zierlein, who dropped a quite an interesting mock draft today, has Shador dropping to 29, has the Cowboys taking Ashton Jeanty. He's going to join us at 8 o'clock
as well.
You
got Zierlein on, huh?
Come on now.
That's a LZ. Big listen right
Good
there.
Get. Hey, come on. Two great gets, dude.
Well, I know LZ from, you know, he does radio in H-Town, so I know him from down there.
Nice.
So, you know, hey, look, fighting crime yesterday. We're Woo! Just taking, look, I slept 3.5 hours last night.
I couldn't tell.
So we're just.
You look great.
Hope it was worth it.
Thanks.
There he goes.
It was.
Fred and Blake, Santa, 7 baby. To 11, the Fan After Dark coming up next. Thanks to Lucius Alexander and the Pimp Cup at Master Control. Thanks to Woolchuck and Chiafalo and Broadus. I'm Gavin Dawson. Till tomorrow at 2, you're going home with the Nation's Loot.